From Santa Monica, California, here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, and other organizations for the purpose of improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. This seminar is entitled, Factors Causing Disease and Promoting Health. Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about the movement.
When they throw the ball of anger at you, you catch it and return them the softball of gentleness. And you start playing the game with them. And pretty soon, their anger is transformed into loving and upliftment. But take anger and use it too. If the car falls on your toe out of your anger, pick up the car and move your foot. Gently. If you throw the car too far, I get the other foot. The next one I came up with was weakness. It's this feeling that says, I can't do it. I'm not strong enough. I'm weak. And you know what we use? We use our weakness as the tyranny of weakness, the power of weakness to not perform. I can't go, I have a headache. Get up and go. Well, I can't water ski, I don't know how. You won't learn sitting down. Get up on the skis, I'll fall, yes. I can't swim, put on a vest. Take a deep breath though. I can't sing, practice. Oh no, why not? I can't sing, I know, practice. Takes lessons. Get going. No, I'm protecting my weakness. And that weakness will be where your illness comes and your disease lives. So what is the cure for weakness? Strength. I don't care what your illness is. You can have fun with it. If you're going to die of leukemia, there's no need to die in 5 years through depression. Why don't you go ahead and have some fun and play with it and see what it's all about? I mean, if the leukemia's eating up 70% of your blood supply, you might want to join the vampire society or something like that. Maybe you don't want that. Maybe you want your own blood. Manufacture it. I don't know how. Get busy and start studying. Have some fun with it. Go to somebody else, ask them, how did you play with yours when you got over? Well, you know, when they told me I had this illness, I just tightened down inside. I said, not me. And I was so tight for months that I not only had that illness, I got two more. I didn't die of leukemia. I died of pneumonia because I wouldn't breathe. I died of heart failure. I died of something else. Yeah, we die all right in our weakness. But what is the cure? Strength. No matter what your illness is, folks, get some strength in it because it needs it. No matter what your illness is, get some strength in it because it needs it. Illness and strength are not compatible. One has to go. The strength will not go. Strength is an inner term. Power is an outer term. I'm talking about an inner strength. You know, that's like the person says, whatever you do, don't go to this dentist down here, such and such a place, because my uncle went, and 2 days later, he was dead. Say, well, good, great gravy. What happened? Say, he got hit by a truck crossing the street. So what's that got to do with the dentist? It was in front of the dentist's office where he got hit. Well, that doesn't mean anything about the dentist. Yeah, but he was going back in there for a checkup. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been down there. So therefore, it's the dentist's fault. And there is that type of thinking that we use to attempt to justify what's gone on. Hey, if you've made a mistake in your life, why don't you just call it a mistake and correct it? It's as simple as that. It's called owning it, taking authority over it. Taking authority over it produces strength. Yes, I've got it, and now I'm going to do something about it. But there's no cure. There's no cure with a lot of things in present-day modern medical terminology. But in a month or two, in modern medical terminology, there will be, so it exists today. And it may be found in an orthodox approach that the cure can and is found, but can't be found in a lot of approaches. I mean, there's no cure for cancer being a plumber or being a rancher. However, the fresh air may help. The number seven, as I put here, is doubt. That's called double bind in a double mind. I think so, but I doubt it. I think I'm getting well, but I'm not sure. I'm sure she loves me, but I don't know. They might, but maybe they might not. It's often referred to as the old evil eye. It's your own eye looking back on you. How's the day? It's just wonderful, except my back hurts. So we have that type of doubt. What is the cure for it? Understanding that that is a human condition. Doubt is a human condition. And do not dwell upon it, but use it as a method to prove or disprove that you're going into. I doubt if it's so, then get up and go find out. And if it's not so, your doubt has been part of your knowledge. If it is so, your doubt has been part of your guidance system. Either way, you get to use it. It's when we sit there in this mind, well, I guess we call it left half and right half. Of course, you people know that they're thinking of it this way. No, it's kitty corner from the right back to the left front. It's diagonal, half that way. Oh, it's not. Oh, you mean it's cut in half this way, from ear to ear. Well, whoever said which half it was? Well, right half and left half. That depends on where you're sitting looking. Hey, I'll let you in on a secret. They're going to find out. The brain isn't divided into right, and left hemispheres. The brain is an associational organism. It's not even a hologram. It's associational. You'll get that later on when they come out with it. If you have understanding, which is the cure for doubt, when doubt goes up, you say, I understand that I get doubt, and that means there's something there that I don't know, and I'm running assumptions on or presumptions on that I do know, and I don't have the factual, evidential information, so therefore I can't stand on it with a solid conviction, and therefore I feel funny inside, and my mind and my emotions waver. If you know that, you get the information to go yes or to go no. What happens if we go, yes, no, yes, no? Or we go, don't stop, don't stop, don't stop, don't stop. And so the doubt keeps going. Make it stop or make it work. Everything that comes into your environment, internally, externally, used to your advantage by using it for your upliftment. If you do, you won't be to anybody else's disadvantage. They may not like that you're getting ahead, but that's them. But at least you'll be showing them how it can be done. That's important. Not to teach them. Just do it. They'll observe. They'll watch. They'll get it. The eighth one I come up with is intolerance. Another word for this would just be saying, I'm better than you, and I'm not going to listen to you. I know it, and you don't. Don't bother me. That's also a form of prejudice. I know even before I know that I know. It's also a form of looking so closely at one little thing. It's the story of six blind men looking at an elephant, and they all describe various parts of it, and none of them got the whole idea. That type of intolerance, where no matter what the person does, you can find something wrong with it. You can make them wrong if they're right, which is a cheap shot. You want me to show you how cheap it is? You're all wrong. Yeah. See? Pretty cheap. Making everybody right is just as cheap. You want to hear it? You're all right. But one thing I do know is you're all okay, which is just alphabet. What's the cure for intolerance? Tolerance. Not tolerance of procrastination. Tolerance of being with the person and finding out what it is they're going through, what it is that they are experiencing. Some people will declare their experience because they've had it to be the paramount of all things, and they can be hallucinating. Now, hallucinating is a human characteristic. Everybody in this room hallucinates. Not necessarily as a psychiatric or psychological term, but yes, it could be. How many in this room, and we're going to do it this way by raise of hand, have never daydreamed? Never. Never fantasized. Never had wishful thinking. Those are all hallucinations. They also can be planning for what you want when you use it the right way. It's when you hallucinate and never go for it. Look, if you're going to have a hallucination, let me give you a key. Be sure that other people can relate to it. If they don't, they're going to lock you up. Then they're going to tell you, don't hallucinate like that. Hallucinate the way I want you to. Guided fantasies, guided meditations are a way to deal with hallucinations, by the way. You go right into the hallucination field and guide them right out the other side. It's a wonderful way. Depending on some fantasies, of course, none of us want to get rid of. Like, I might get a lot of money next year. The ninth one I came up with is just a plain old ignorance. How was I supposed to know? Nobody told me. The answer to that, the cure to that is very good. Did you think to ask? No, I was too dumb to think to ask. What could I have asked? Probably, do you have a mouth? Yes. There's a good chance you could have. What is the cure then for ignorance? Wisdom. How do you get wisdom? Practice, practice, practice. How do you get a lot of practice? Make a lot of mistakes. How do you make a lot of mistakes? Living your life to the fullest you can, with the situation you're in and what you got to deal with. Pretty soon you go, ah, I get that. It's called insight. I've called it wisdom. The tenth one I came up with is impatience. How long is this thing going to last? How long is he going to talk? Will he get off there before too long? Oh, my God. I'm so antsy. He hasn't said anything that I don't know yet. Jeez. What's going on with that guy? He's saying all these things. I know that already. Why is he sick then? Well, because you know it intellectually as data, but you don't know it as experience of living your life. And that's the difference in data versus the experience. The data should bring the experience called the transformation. Most of us got our mind so filled with junk with the last book we read, with the last person we identified with the book, that we start running that as our life. And of course, when the person died of being hanging or drowning, whatever you do, don't go near water or carry rope with you because you may do yourself in. Just on an impetuous day. Well, the cure for impatience is forgiveness. You know what forgiveness goes? Jr. doesn't know any better, or he'd shut up. I got a real cutting comeback for that one, though. I didn't pay to get in here tonight. Of course, maybe you didn't either. But you're paying by the hour here. I'm only going to go an hour. That's it, and I stop. Forgiveness is an emotional quality. But there's one that's a little higher than that. It's called forgetting. When you've truly forgiven somebody, you forget it. We go, okay, next, next, next. Too many of us have said, I've forgiven my mother and father for beating me almost to death when I was 3 years old. Oh, yeah? Oh, no, you haven't. Yes, I've forgiven them. I remember the stick they used. Forget it. No, I ain't going to forget that. There's no real forgiveness until there is forgetting. Forgetting is the emotional energy, the picture of it is gone, and it's stored in memory files as reference points called when somebody gets a big stick, duck. Or don't do that to anybody else. The next one, and this is probably one that hurts most people, is called terror. When people are filled with terror. Terror is usually involved with, what if they leave me? What if they're taken away from me? Oh my God, what would I do? What would I do? Well, what did you do before you got there? I was looking. Keep looking. Terror is a self-induced attachment to materiality. With emotions running on top of it, with a hallucination of what it might be. And the cure for that is very easy. Courage. R, which is a French word meaning heart. Go to your heart and be loving. In the place of loving, terror does not exist. It just does not exist. But the loving courage can move out and terror can move back in if you've set up housekeeping with it. Some people are married to these things. They live in those more than they live in the positive. And the 12th one I had was grief. When you've lost somebody, and I'm going to say this in sort of strange terms, that you have invested a whole amount, a great deal of yourself into them, called my son, my daughter, my husband, my wife, my parents, and maybe they die or something happens to them. The grief that goes into that cannot be told to somebody who has not experienced grief. It goes so deep that it goes into the very cells of your existence and your body. So deep. But we find out through insight training and through the health training that you can assist a person out of the grief, which is the killer, by curing them with joy. Joy isn't something where you say, okay, let's have joy. However, that can work. If you've got enough of it, it starts trickling out there. And some people can't stand joy. They can't stand it. It's electrifying. It can keep you awake. It's like a sugar rush. Hey, it bubbles up, bubbles up. You're going, I don't know what this is. It's like a little kid who you're going to take to a Disneyland someplace for the first time. And they get so excited that it takes longer because you've got to stop every place and let them go to the bathroom. It does make the body move. It makes the body transform. And that's extremely important. Those are the causes of diseases and the cures. I want to just very rapidly go through what I call the healing stages. And I didn't necessarily put these in any order. But as a matter of fact, they're in a real good order. And I've already talked about these in the sense of the word, but now I'm going to condense them. And I came up with 7 out of the 12, only because I see that some of the others overlapped and had certain qualities that were similar, so one word would grab 2 things. The first one is peace. That's you coming into yourself where there's no war, where you can take both points of view within yourself and look at them and have discernment and not fight, getting agitated, upset, and worrying, carrying on that conversation in your mind, being the antagonist and the protagonist until you're so ripped apart that you're ready to kill them. They open the door and you throw something at them. I'm talking about the inner peace. Again, that's not sitting in the corner saying, I'm having peace. That's called stale, stagnant, sitting in a corner. I'm talking about the peace of you doing your life and doing your work without the terror, the fear, all these other things. The second one I came up with is hope. It's a quality that is so nebulous, it's like grabbing hold of air. And yet, there was a saying, hope springeth eternally. And I said, that's the problem. I don't want it to keep springing up. I want it to come over here and get in here so we can do something with it. And yet, the very idea that I hope I'll get better may be one of the stepping stones for you to start doing what is necessary for you to get better, to get into a better place, a happier place. But to do this, you have to hope there's a better place than where you are. The bad news is most people think, if I go on that, it won't be as good as I've got, and if it isn't as good as I've got, there's no hope. So they use that then as the negative process on themselves. The third one was joy. Why have joy? Why not? It's fun. It's happiness. Just, it'll come up inside of you. When joy comes up as a profound, ecstatic feeling, you know, ecstasy is Greek for ecstasis, meaning outside of yourself. And you almost are outside of yourself, outside of the bounds of your regular mode of upright behavior, know-it-all rigidness. Joy comes in, and you start moving with the fluidness inside of you, that people come up and assault you, and you still have joy. And it's like, they recognized me. They thought it was an insult, and I just got recognized. It's a wonderful feeling. Some of the disasters that people have had have found tucked in them joy. I was watching on television a news report about a hurricane in Hawaii. We got out of there just before it got in there, which is nice. And a couple were talking, being interviewed, and one of them made a real profound statement. He said, I've been here many years, and they listed 20 or 30, and I've met people this time that I've known for a long time, but I didn't know what they were like, and I'm so joyful to find out who they are. And there was joy when they said it. And the background behind them was cars tipped over, buildings amok, and things ripped up. And they were saying, and I'm joyful that I found them. Because it brought them into a common denominator. Now, I'm not saying, let's all have a disaster so we can have a common denominator. I mean, we're already a disaster. We're just waiting for it to happen. Or looking for it to happen. Well, don't we go around saying, oh, this is going to be bad, this will be terrible, that. You're just a disaster waiting to happen. When it happens, you go, see, I was right. Hey, be wrong on that one. It's okay. The fourth one I came up with was faith. I'm not talking about faith in a biblical religious term. I'm talking about faith based upon some experience that you can do and that it gives you a strength to take a giant step into the next thing. Some of you may say, well, I don't have the faith to be a doctor. Have you gone first year med school? No. Right, well, you don't need faith at this point. What you need is education. That education, though, is a foundation you're building to make a step called, now I'm a doctor. And that faith is based upon evidence that you can succeed. And now in a religious sense. Everybody who talks about faith bases it upon some form of evidential experience or information, or they wouldn't be dealing in faith. Underneath it, there is something where they can say, and because it says so in this book, therefore. And blind faith isn't what we're dealing with. The fifth one I came up with is certainty. It is a conviction deep down inside of you that I am healthy, wealthy, and happy, and I didn't use the word rich. I'm using the word wealthy in terms of being well, a state of well-being, wealthy in terms of that. The only thing that I know of that is certain is who you are beyond the body, emotion, mind, unconscious hallucinations, because you can stand back and look at yourself doing that. And that place that stands back and looks at all that is the one that is the certainty, where you know that you know, and there's no evidence, and it's okay. You put your body on the line, and you live it based upon that. And you live your life based upon that certainty. That's why that's not called faith. The sixth one is wisdom. People say, well, I'm not as smart as the next person. I'm not talking about smart. We got smart people running the world. Look what they're doing. Running the world. I'm talking about the wisdom called caring for yourself and the person next to you. I'm talking about the wisdom of you having an experience that has given you success even in the failure. You learn the success in the failure. Some people have marriage, they have a failure, and they don't want another marriage because they got a failure. What happened? Didn't you learn anything in that one? Yeah. Well, don't repeat that. Oh, well, if I don't repeat it, you might have some. What if I do repeat it? You should be able to do it better and faster than you did the first time. So you can get in and out of it in a hurry. I don't want to get in and out of it in a hurry. I want it to last. Then do those things that make it last. And most of us know what they are. Most every one of us know when to keep our mouth shut and when not to say cutting remarks. And we'll say the cutting remark. That's not wisdom, folks. That's called stupid. And the seventh one I came up with that encompasses them all is love. Not love as just a bump on the log, but loving as an action that encompassed the other six: peace, hope, joy, faith, certainty, wisdom. Loving. An action where you reach out and you touch someone and you lift them by a smile, by a look, by a thought, by saying something to them that you do remember them. I gave a lady a book a long time ago, and it was a gift to her. And about 6 months after that, I got back this letter that said, "Thank you for the book, and I certainly enjoyed reading this paragraph on this page, and I enjoyed this one chapter." It was remarkable. She was a lady, not just a woman. I was so overwhelmed that she took the time to write back and tell me thanks for the book. But not only that, she'd read and remarked on the parts that she liked and shared it with me. And through the mail, she reached out and was loving me. I immediately sent her another book. I mean, there's nothing like good PR stuff. You are your own public relations. You are your own health machine, you're your own destruction machine. Let there be peace on earth, but let it begin with me. Let that be your motto. Be'erush Be'Shan.
John Rogers' closing words were Be'erush Be'Shan, which means the blessings already are. The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.